When a brand new cub makes its big entrance, it often takes a while to get complete acceptance.
Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I'm your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are talking about something that a lot of families go through but don't always know the best way to approach, which is introducing a new member into the household. It's something I personally went through with my youngest, Mitzi, and it's always an odd time in any family because you suddenly have this new person in the house who isn't a pet and isn't an object, isn't a new toy, isn't a temporary change either. It's a game changer. It is a change in the complete structure of a family. And in the Berenstain Bears' new baby, which we covered many years ago, we saw the way the Berenstains handled it by simply having Papa and Brother Bear go out into the woods, and when they returned, there was a new baby. And Brother was fine with it, and everything was fine, and we never talked about it again. Then the next time we met Sister Bear, she was 5 years old, and we just skipped that whole thing. Well, we have a new member of the Bear family, Honey, and this time we're actually getting down a little bit more into the grit of having a new kid in the house. Now, I am not an authority figure on this subject, so this week, as my guest, I am bringing on someone who is more of an authority figure on this subject. Please welcome to the show, educator, writer, and poet, Annette Gagliardi. Hello, Annette.
Good morning. And hello, everybody.
It's so great to have you on the show. Now, I know you because you were my early childhood educator.
That's right. Early childhood family education in Minneapolis.
Yeah, we did this program for a couple of years.
Yes, you and Mitzi.
Yep. We were there and you covered all kinds of topics in class.
Yes, child development, all the ins and outs.
And there are quite a few ins. I mean, obviously, children begin developing as soon as they're born and they just keep on developing.
Yeah, they actually develop from the moment of conception, and there's a lot of stuff that goes on before they're born that is fascinating development as well.
And how long had you been teaching early childhood development?
I taught for 30 years, mm-hmm. And so I think when you were one of my students, it had been about 25 years.
Wow. And you have also, of course, personal experience raising kids.
Four daughters, mm-hmm. And we had two fairly close together, and like the Berenstain Bears, our girls were 7 and 8 when our third daughter came along, and they were 13 and 14 and 5 when the youngest came along. So yes, we did deal with baby makes 5.
Uh-huh.
And a funny story, if you don't mind interrupting. When our third daughter, I was expecting our third daughter, we said to the girls, we have a surprise for you, and they thought we were going to Disneyland. And they were a little disappointed. It was just another sister.
Just another sister. So were you familiar with the Berenstain Bears?
Yes, actually, I looked up some of the books I have. I have a little stack, mm-hmm. here of Berenstain Bears books.
And were these books that you read to your children or to your grandchildren? Or
yeah, absolutely, our girls. I actually haven't read them to my grandkids yet, but there's still time.
Yeah, and there's plenty to choose from.
Yes, a lot more than there used to be, actually.
There certainly are, and more every month. And oh boy, I'm going to be doing this show till the end of time because I can't keep up. Well, let's move on to Baby Makes 5. This book comes from the year 2000. It is the book after The Birds and the Bees and the Berenstain Bears, which I have not covered yet, but will be coming up very soon. That's the book where you discover that Mama was pregnant and in which Sister had a lot of questions about pregnancy. And this is the book, and we're seeing the fallout of that pregnancy, what happens.
The result, conclusion. Yes.
So why don't you take us through the book a little bit and just tell us what happens in this story.
Well, the first thing that I noticed about this book is something that I do because I'm a teacher in my books. They put a bottle maze and stickers on it. And so you're asking the reader to kind of include or extend the book a little bit. But in this story, then, we're talking about the new member of the bear family, Honey. She's just come home and everybody's excited about it except for Sister. And it talks about all of the things that you need to do with the baby. The baby needs to be fed and burped and comforted and diapered. And you also cuddle and fuss about the baby and kitchy-coo the baby. And all of those things take a lot of time. And it talks a lot about mom and dad are really busy taking care of this baby. And brother is nonchalantly accepting the baby, but he's busy. He's doing homework.
Right, and he's been through this before.
He's done this. He doesn't care. But sister's got an attitude, and she doesn't like that there's so much attention. They have some visitors who come, and they make a big fuss over the baby, too. And I thought it was interesting that Uncle Louie says to Sister, "I guess you're not the big star around here anymore." Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, I posted that image on social media last week, and a bunch of people reacted about this. Uncle Louie is a character we've never met before. He never shows back up. I don't know who Uncle Louie, I don't even know who's like brother.
He's kind of rude.
He's who would do that to a child? Like he literally pulls Sister into a corner and like points at her and makes fun of the fact that she's no longer the big cheese in the family.
I think that they did that so that it would become abundantly clear that Sister was no longer the center of attention. It was, and I think children do, even if they may not hear those exact words, may feel that way, especially.
So it's kind of an externalization of what's going on in their head.
Right.
Like, no matter what people say to them, it feels like they're saying, "You're not as big a deal anymore."
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so people are always, "Oh, she's so cute. And it does look like in the book, Sister is really being ignored for the new one. I thought it was interesting. The mother says, "Don't say PU," and then she hands Sister a diaper that she needs to rinse out in the toilet before throwing away. So PU. So she gives her a stinky diaper.
Right. But it also shows that Sister is expected to help out with the child. Like, and it's very casual the way that's introduced. Like, there's no like, "Would you please do this?" It's more just like, "Oh," she says, "would you do me a favor?" But it's obviously clearly expected that no matter what your feelings on this child are,
you're still going to help out.
Yeah.
It doesn't give, that's really the only contact that Sister has sort of in the story so far. She's sort of in a corner a lot, but in that's really the first contact that we see.
You're right.
That Sister has with the baby. And then they continue making a fuss, but they see then after that, they talk a little bit here now about the birds take care of their young, and the mother fox takes care of her young, and the mother kangaroo takes care of her young. And brother could tell that Sister was out of sorts, but the mother doesn't notice and father doesn't notice until Sister brings home the drawing of the family and the baby is not in it.
So I like this use of the school project to sort of illustrate that it sort of kicks the parents in the pants and is like, "Have you noticed that your child is feeling a little neglected?" But also it's not just that she's feeling neglected, it's that she doesn't seem to consider the baby a member of the family.
Right. There wasn't enough room on the page, which I think was a good way for Sister to rationalize that she's feeling like there's not enough room in the family for all of that. And I wondered if it would be different if it was a new brother rather than a new sister. I wonder if in our family we had no sons. Now we have son-in-laws, so they're fabulous.
Yes.
But it's interesting if you have another child who's the same gender than you. I'm wondering if the opposite gender is, or the other gender, is a different experience.
Oh, if she would feel a little less displaced.
Right. Because she'd still be the only girl.
Right.
In a family of three children. So then when Mama sees this, she's like, something's going on. So this is catching Mom's attention. So then they bring down the videos of Sister that shows that Sister was loved and hugged and oohed and awed over as much as the other baby. And then suddenly she's happy. So I felt like That was, and I would, and if we took movies of our kids, we didn't really do that.
Uh-huh.
We had pictures, and our youngest, I always thought it was humorous. Our youngest was so mad when we went back through our photos because she wasn't in all those pictures.
Oh, interesting.
She wasn't born yet.
Right.
So it was harder to get her into those pictures. Now you could probably do it. But I remember her being very mad about not being in some of the pictures and not understanding that, honey, that was all done before you were born.
Right.
couldn't get you in there.
So how do you think Mama and Papa did handling this once they realized how Sister felt?
Well, you know, I liked that they responded immediately, that mm-hmm. once they figured out that something was going on, and Brother knew, but he didn't say anything. He's
right.
like, I got my own thing. But Mother and Father pretty much said, okay, let's deal with it. And they did it in a kind of a very gentle way
yeah.
with the movies, and they didn't sit her down and say, now this is a problem or anything. They just kind of, let's show these videos of you, which I thought was good. And, you know, maybe in my place, I could take out the baby books of the other children and show them. And I think we did that anyway, just kind of preemptively.
Right.
So,
speaking of preemptively, what do you think Mama and Papa could have done earlier, or maybe should have done earlier, before this became the issue it did?
Yeah, and I don't know if, you know, Ezra Jack Keats, I think, does something good. The Peter's New Chair.
Yes.
Which is, you know, we get out the crib and you use the crib and now baby's going to use the crib and we maybe get the high chair out and or the bouncy chair or whatever and maybe some of the baby clothes because you got another girl. So, and that was one of the things that, in our family, all of our children were baptized in the same little outfit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things we talked about. And we took pictures of them in their outfit. And then we looked at them and said, oh, you all look alike or similar or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And so you commented on, this baby's wearing the same outfit that you wore when you were that age. And played with this toy. And even with our grandkids now, we have a little granddaughter that's with us 3 days a week. And we were talking the other day about, this is the same puzzle that your mom was
Aww.
Using, you know, and she's two, she doesn't care.
Right.
As she gets older, she'll understand it more. But right now she doesn't
right.
really.
No, it's even in the Berenstain Bears new baby, which I mentioned earlier, like Papa takes Brother out into the woods and because Brother notices that he's outgrowing his crib, his little baby bed, they call it. And, Papa goes, they go out into the woods and they build Brother a new bed is, I mean, cause
I remember that book. I
it's
think
a very
we have
rural
that one.
Setting.
Right. And then he says, what's going to happen to my bed? And they mm-hmm. say just in time for baby sister.
Right. Which of course they hadn't in the context of the book, they hadn't even told Brother that there was a baby coming. Like they show up and there's this baby, but it seems like the parents actually in that book did a better job, maybe preparing the child for that sense of displacement that mm-hmm. might come, like by saying like, it's a good thing, like you're growing up, so you don't mm-hmm. need that. You're not the baby anymore.
I wonder though, I mean, as an author, you have to take a segment of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if this was sort of after this book is sort of after the baby's arrived. So maybe their segment of time, they could have made a little paragraph saying we've done some things before, but
right.
I don't know how you'd get that into this.
Oh, of course not.
This story.
So
this is a story of after. But, you know, even if you do all those preemptive things, you're still going to have a little jealousy.
Yeah.
And I think that at a certain point, young children say, baby can go home now or go away oh. now. You know, this is all good and well, but now, you know.
Yeah.
Especially, I think, when the younger child is crawling and starts taking my toys, you know, or destroying my Lego or my Duplo thing or whatever. Now I want the baby to go away.
Right.
You know, so that's kind of what happens very frequently with young children.
And I like that it never paints Honey's behavior or anything as extreme or unusual. It's just, it's very matter of fact. Like
right.
babies cry, they spit up, they smell weird.
This isn't
something that you as a child, this isn't being foisted on you for any reason other than that's just what a baby is like. But I do think that Mama and Papa, I do think that the parents do have something of a responsibility of making sure that the younger kids don't feel neglected, even if it's maybe making sure that one of the other relatives does pay any some sort of positive attention to the other child.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that we always talk about in our early family, early childhood family ed classes is what do you do with the older child after the baby comes? And a lot of times the older child gets a gift, and often the gift is a baby doll. Mm-hmm. So they can imitate mom when she's feeding or changing the baby. Then they change their doll or they rock their doll at the same time. But then the other thing that happens is you say, okay, baby's napping now. This is our special time to read a book or to do whatever.
Yeah.
So parents are invited to find a special thing to do with their older child so that that older child knows that they are not being ignored all the way.
Right. What's interesting about this book, and I noticed this with a lot of the Berenstain Bears first-time books. Now, they aren't called first-time books anymore. I think it's now called Berenstain Bears Classics, if you look at the cover up in the corner.
Classics.
But the original series was called First Time, and because it was covering first concepts, like these, every kid has the first time they encounter X, Y, or Z. First time you go to the doctor, first time you, I guess, have to get up on stage and stage fright. And this is first time you have a younger sibling. What I find interesting is that this book almost seems to be more focused, written for the parents than it does for a child, because it gives a solution to a problem that only a parent can enact, as opposed to providing comfort to a child who might be experiencing this. It almost seems like a mini instruction manual for parents who...
Right. For me, it was like, honey, it would take more than you showing me videos to change my mind so completely. It was like, sister, oh, she saw that and she got it right away. And so that would be my only criticism of
right.
the story is like, okay, it's going to take more than you showing videos. There better be other strategies going on.
Well, it does say that evening after the new baby was asleep. And I'm like, there's that thing you just mentioned. Like you put the kid down to bed and that's when you make sure and have a little non-baby family time.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't say all the way earlier in the book about what was happening after the baby was sleeping.
No.
You know, I mean, I'm assuming that they were still putting sister and brother to bed and maybe reading books or
right.
eating or whatever. They didn't say anything like that. But again, that could be the confines of a story.
You right.
have to stick to the facts.
Now, what's interesting is, okay, it does say the baby. Okay, so the book announces at the very beginning a baby girl named Honey. And for those, in Bear Country, in book continuity, this is the first time we've ever heard this baby's name. The baby had no name in the previous, before it was born. It was... In fact, I believe they had a contest, name the Berenstain Bears new baby.
Oh, funny.
Honey won, which...
Well, that's appropriate it's because
fine.
Of bears. And
oh, right. Their favorite food.
Their favorite food. And does sister have a name?
No. So
so it's brother so and sister.
It is unusual in that brother, sister, mama, and papa are brother and sister and mama. Before sister was born, brother was named Small Bear. And then when sister was born, he became Brother Bear. But their names are very like those; they're just designated
generic bears.
Yep, they are that. They are those roles, and everyone else in Bear Country has names, but they are forever Mama, Papa, sister, and brother. And so it's interesting that A, Honey Bear has a first name. B, that throughout the rest of the book, Honey Bear is only referred to as it, and the baby, the new baby, and the new baby. Yep. It, sometimes she, but frequently it and just the baby. In fact, I don't know if Honey ever comes up again in the story. So as writers, they seem to be doing this thing where they are actually distancing the reader from Honey as well. Like, here's how sister sees this whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
It is this thing, this it. It's just the mm-hmm. baby.
She's a stink bug.
Yep.
Sister says. That's kind of cute.
We do get more a sense of this child as a nuisance. And Honey Bear doesn't actually become a character for many years. She stays just
a baby.
Just this baby in a playpen. I think now she's a toddler, but she doesn't fulfill much of a role in the Berenstain Bears household for a long time. She's just this distraction. She gets sick, she cries. She says goo a lot.
Well, that's good. She's fluent then in baby.
Yes.
Baby talk.
Yes, it's funny. They don't, I don't even know how you would say it. Like, they don't do what some book series do, some children's entertainment does, which is make a baby more aware of its life than babies actually are. Like, until a certain point, a baby is just
kind of just there.
Yeah. Kind of just there.
Well, especially in a two-dimensional black and white, you can't in a child's book, it's really hard to give depth to characters because you have 32 pages.
Now, you write children's books.
I have written a couple of children's books, and I have a couple out making the rounds looking for a publisher.
What age range do you tend to focus on in your children's writing?
My first book, The Three Betty Goats Griff, mm-hmm. is early elementary, so preschool for basically to second and third grade. The second book is A Tall Tale, so that's more resourceful, Erica, and it's a paper folding story that I put into a book form, and that is more first through third, fourth graders. I have the directions for the paper folding, and then you kind of have to be second, third grade in order to kind of pull off that paper folding.
Yeah.
But I'm presenting it to third and fourth graders as well as first and second graders.
Because it's interesting, because this book is clearly written at a level of about, I don't know, you'd just say like 7-8-year-olds.
Yeah, I would say early elementary, that same age range. And my nephew that was here read it just a little bit ago, and he's a second grader. And he was like, oh, yeah, I wanted to read these books. So he was excited that I brought them up.
Well, because now this book, Mike has talked about how this style of book, he can't get published anymore because now the publishers want him to write for younger and younger and younger readers with fewer words per page.
Fewer words.
And I was actually comparing this book to the books that are coming out now. And it is like he still covers topics like going to the hospital and things like that. But he gets fewer pages and he has to simplify the text.
This is too many words for 5-year-olds, 4 and 5-year-olds. I mean, I think that a 5-year-old who is used to reading books with their parents will sit for this book.
Right.
But it wouldn't be the first book you'd choose if your 5-year-old isn't reading a lot or isn't reading with you a lot. My kids, we started reading when they were infants and we just read with them every day and read tons and tons of books. So by 5, they would have been sitting for this.
Yeah, Mitzi will sit and she'll listen to I always read to her, of course, above her reading level because
that's a good idea.
And like we read Little Women together. I guess I read Little Women to her and she followed the whole thing. And we've watched several movies of it. She loves to like read a book and then watch its adaptation to see like how ideas change and like what they emphasize. And
plus it's good review and it's good critical thinking, because when you look at somebody who's done a movie of it, you can say, what did they leave out? Mm-hmm. What did they change that wasn't in the book?
You're right.
You know, and how did they portray the character that you kind of like, the one that you like the best? I always focus on the one I like the best and think, well, I wouldn't have made her, you know, what, that sarcastic or that wimpy or whatever, you know, whatever they changed my character to be.
You're right. We talk about the Berenstain Bears were adapted into television shows twice, once in the 80s and once in the early 2000s. And the 80s was, of course, a Saturday morning cartoon. So the characters are all very goofy. There's a lot of pratfalls. There's like villains. There's a lot of action. But then the early 2000s was done by Nelvana for PBS. And they had so many rules when they were, because Stan and Jan Berenstain and Mike, they were all very involved in these, like approving scripts. You know, they never signed away their characters. They were always like, no, we are in charge of these characters. But PBS was like, the Berenstain Bears are too rough for us. You've got to tone them down. So like they weren't allowed to have the bullies be bullies anymore. Brother and sister really couldn't be angry or argue or like they could get annoyed at each other, but you definitely wouldn't see sister like slamming doors and like pouting because of the new baby. She would be much more thoughtful about it. And Mike said that was something that Stan, his father, always was just like, bullies are bullies, because they were like, you can't make the bullies scary because we don't want to scare kids. And Stan was like, bullies are scary. That's why they're bullies. You gotta have something to have people go up against. But I've covered many of the episodes to sort of compare them to the books that they've adapted. And it's interesting how when you adapt a work like this, it kind of gives you a second chance to fix some of these little problems that some of the books might have, like wonky narratives or ideas that sort of go off nowhere and never resolve. But I think Baby Makes Five, this book we're discussing, does a really good job for this era of Berenstain Bears of finding a subject, addressing it, sticking to it, and seeing it through to a resolution.
Yes, and like I said, it's a clip. It's just a clip in time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the pre-stuff might have happened. We don't know, you know.
And we don't know if this sticks.
Yeah, and after this, maybe Mama Bear doesn't stay with just the videos, that she pays more attention to Sister after that.
And of course, maybe Sister does have like relapses. Like maybe this isn't the only time Sister will get upset at Honey. Goodness knows.
Oh, probably not.
it's a baby, and
yeah. Once the baby starts getting into Sister's stuff, it might be a whole different thing. Or if they have to share a room, or
oh yes,
yeah. There's lots of things.
So I would say, like, as far as a useful tool is concerned, how would you grade Berenstain Bears and Baby Makes Five?
Oh, you mean as a tool for me as a parent to read this for my child who's got a new sibling?
Sure.
Yeah, I would read it. I would read it among other books. Mm-hmm. We're potty training our granddaughter these days, and I've got 5 potty training books. I've resurrected some from our house, and I went to the library and picked out a few others. And so she's reading them and catching on slowly, but catching on.
Yeah, it might be the kind of book that you can look at and say, like, when you're reading about Sister's experiences in the beginning, you can say, like, have you ever felt this way? Like, do you ever feel this way about the baby? Do you ever feel this way about your brother or sister? And it's what I kind of call a conversation starter.
Oh yeah, I just read them and I see how my child is reacting, and I think that a lot of these things that the Berenstains are saying in here are true to for babies. But the one I keep coming back to is where, you know, the birds take care of their babies and the other animals take care of their babies. That helps a child understand that this is kind of a universal thing. Mm. And maybe I would get my child something to take care of, not a dog, not a cat, no. But a fish maybe, you know, or a crab or something, so that they could do some caretaking or have them really help do a special job with the baby. Mm-hmm. Not taking the diaper to the trash.
Right.
Although our grandson loved doing that with his with his sister, and we would say, "Ben, it's your turn," and he would be, "Yeah," and he would run it to the trash, which was really fabulous. So there are some things, you know, that you can have the child help with that makes them feel that they're special and that they're needed and that they're still useful in the family.
Yeah. I like this book. I think it's a nice fit for anyone's Berenstain Bear bookshelf. It's colorful. It's a little more sparse than some of the previous books as far as like the illustrations go. But I think that they did a good job. And Sister's facial expressions throughout the book are very exaggerated and colorful. And she is the, as we've all seen in these books, she is the queen of the discouraged, angry face. In the Berenstain family. So Sister gets a lot of good face acting in this book. And Aunt Min and Uncle Louie, while we never see them again and we don't know whose brother or sister they are a fascinating couple of characters. I don't know. Someone on Facebook suggested that, like, Aunt Min looks like kind of the way she has the big glasses and the headband, she kind of looks like she was a hippie maybe in the 1970s, and she's that cool aunt who, like, married some guy who still dresses in, like, a suit and a handlebar mustache. And once again, we are dealing with bears with mustaches. He's also got long hair in the back, and it's something I never see in the Berenstain Bears. He's a man with like a almost like a comb. He's probably has a comb over and like the long hair that he's growing.
He's got the part in the middle.
Yeah, to compensate for maybe a little thinning out on top.
Hadn't thought of that. I thought he was dapper.
Yeah, I think he's faux dapper. I think he thinks
perhaps
he's
so.
Dapper. Or he was dapper when he met Aunt Min, maybe, and times have changed.
But the striped suit with the buttons really kind of dates him.
Yes, and the only time we've seen a bear who dresses like this is Raffish Ralph, who is the town swindler who shows up in the chapter books. And the only time we've seen a bear with a handlebar mustache like this was their art teacher, Mr. Smock, who is the artistic type who has a mustache. So a little Berenstain Bear continuity there for any of our listeners. Mr. Smock, who had in the chapter books, that's where we get plots such as the student gets a crush on the teacher and tricks him into going on a date with her.
Wow.
And how this results in a teacher almost getting fired, because that's where the chapter books go. That's a whole other universe than the story books.
I didn't know they had chapter books.
There are over 50 chapter books.
Wow, I'm behind the times. I better go to the library and check them out.
They involve theft and drug ring. There is attempted murder in several of them. There is insurance fraud in way more than you would think would be in a children's book series.
These are not for PBS, obviously.
These are not for PBS. These are for... This was the Berenstains attempting to capitalize on the, like, Goosebumps. Mm. Like, we're trying to, like, catch that, like, 10-year-old, 11-year-old market. Like, so there was a lot more, like, a lot of ghosts on the covers, a lot of mysteries, a lot of, like, who stole the art? The ghosts were never real. They were always people in disguise, but it was a failed experiment, but Stan really wanted to do it because he was trying to stretch his artistic muscles. He wanted to write books. He wanted to take these characters and make them like live beyond the storybooks. And it never really caught on, but there's some really interesting artifacts out there. And I think most of them are available on ebook now. So
check it out.
I just want to remind I believe that our local library at least has a lot of them for, you can check them out on ebook. So I want to remind my listeners that I haven't finished the chapter books yet. I'm getting back to them eventually. And remember to read them. They are a bizarre artifact in the world of the Berenstain Bears. So Annette, where can my listeners find you if they're looking to know more about what you do?
Well, I'm in between websites right now. I had a website that crashed.
Oh, no.
And now I'm just starting to get a new one up. But I am on Hub Pages.
Okay.
And I don't think you can find me at AnnetteGagliardi.com, but you can try. That was my old website. And I'm hoping to have one with, you know, so search my name, Google my name, and you'd be able to find me. Both of my books have their own website.
Okay.
So if you went to thethreebettygoatsgriff.com or resourcefulerica.com, they have information about the book and a lot of teacher downloads or parent downloads.
Great.
Mazes and color pages and interesting things to do around the books. So.
And obviously you are a strong advocate of early childhood education.
Absolutely.
Learning as much as you can as a parent.
As a matter of fact, I am taking my granddaughter to an early childhood Catholic or early childhood family ed class, and I teach early Catholic family life classes at our church.
Worth.
And Minnesota is one of only three states in the United States that requires. In Minnesota, we mandate early childhood family education in every county.
Mm.
So there's some form in every county in Minnesota.
Do you know what the other states are?
The other states, Illinois and California, both have really strong early childhood programs. They might not have early childhood family education, mm-hmm. but they have some early childhood programming that's really strong.
Great. Yeah, it helped so much. It helped just to know that I wasn't alone. Like Alana and I weren't just like the only parents going through stuff. And plus at the end of class, the last half of class involved all the parents leaving their kids in the room with the other teachers.
You get a break.
And all the parents going upstairs and sitting around and drinking coffee and eating great snacks and talking about kids. And that was such a necessary part of my week.
One of the things that's so valuable about that is, first of all, having a time to sit down and actually complete a thought before you're interrupted by your child. I think that's so valuable to parents. And also that parents realize that they're not alone, that this happens to all the parents. One of the quotes that I got from a parent was, "Thank you for telling me my children weren't going to grow up to be sociopaths." I was like, okay, you know, that's, if that's what I've given you, fabulous, you know.
I will admit that the first time Mitzi ever cried at a movie because of something that happened to a character, I was like, okay, good. The sympathy is there. The empathy is there. You feel bad for another person. That's all I needed to know. Well, Annette, thank you so much for being on my show this week.
Oh, you're so welcome. This was fun.
This was really fun. Thanks for welcoming me into your house. And for everyone else out there, you can find me at berenstainbearcast.wordpress.com. I'm on Twitter at bstainbearcast. I have a Patreon page, patreon.com/deepinbearcountry, if you want to visit that. There's a few extra things for patrons of the show. So if you're interested in throwing a few bucks my way every month, I more than welcome it. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with more Berenstain Bears goodness, more collectibles, more TV episodes. Hopefully I'll get back to those chapter books sooner or later. And I'll have more information on the upcoming performance I'll be doing at the end of May, deep in Bear Country, the one-man show I am putting together. If you live in the Twin Cities, or I guess in Minnesota or the Midwest, depending on how far you're willing to travel, I'm going to be doing a performance here in town based on the podcast, not an episode of the podcast, more a reflection on immersing oneself in pop culture ephemera and how that kind of has affected my outlook on life and legacy and art and parenting and being a person in the 21st century. So I'll be filling you in with more information on that as the time comes nearer. Otherwise, I will see you all next time deep in Bear Country.